Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, glad you're along with us. Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today. Happy birthday, Morton.
That's right.
Happy birthday.
The most popular non-Jaguar in Jaguars history.
What would you get the guy who gave you so much, right? The 55 years young today, Morton Anderson. Now, Tony, I don't know if this... Look, I understand when you... If you go in the family of Skoll and the other dipping products you use, you say Copenhagen, right?
Uh-huh.
But I feel that the city in Denmark could be Copenhagen. Am I wrong? Could it be both? Is it a tomato-tomato situation, or is it Copenhagen all the time?
I have no idea.
That's where Anderson was born.
I guess it depends on your accent.
I don't know. That seems like something
like
I could
Europe,
see. Copenhagen.
Yeah, I could see Copenhagen in Europe.
Mattenkeima.
Right.
Yes.
But here it's Copenhagen.
Copenhagen.
Yeah.
All right. Well, but here, I don't know anyone who says tomato either.
Right.
So, either, see? I just did it myself.
But it's not improper, necessarily, to say tomato.
No, I guess it's not. I'm saying it may not be improper to say Copenhagen.
Right.
I don't know. I
digress. I have no idea.
Happy birthday, Morton. Okay. By the way, Morton Anderson, I'm looking. Now, a 30-yard field goal that he missed, right, back in 96. Tony, I realize it's tough to know how many of these came from any one particular distance, but from 30 to 39 yards throughout Morton Anderson's career is 189 for 214. Okay, that's pretty respectable. From 20 to 29 yards, he was 176 for 181. You can almost roll that 30-yarder right into that group, and that shows you he missed five times out of 181 opportunities in the 20 to 29-yard range. It didn't happen all that often. Although, Morton Anderson, lifetime accuracy, what do you think, field goal kicking?
86%.
79.5, right?
Really?
Doesn't that seem like it'd be higher?
It does.
Was it that, were the balls not inflated properly? I don't know what the deal was. He played till he was 47 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Played with the Saints, Tony. Didn't play for any other team until he turned 35. Okay, and then he played like a half dozen years in Atlanta, went to the Giants for a year, went to Kansas City for 2 years, went to Minnesota, and two more years in Atlanta when it was all said and done.
So he left the Saints when he was 35.
He left the Saints when he was 35 and continued for another dozen seasons.
Right, which makes you think about things with Josh Scobie in Jacksonville. Right?
Right.
I mean, it's that a guy like that in New Orleans, they decided, look, it's time for us to move on from Morton Anderson, and the guy still had a dozen years in his career.
Right. I don't know who the Saints switched to in 95 when they made the switch, but chances are he wasn't as prolific as Morton Anderson.
Probably not.
So happy birthday, Morton Anderson. Happy Wednesday to all of you out there, and I thought Jeff and Dan brought up some interesting points on the preseason numbers of Blake Bortles last year, Tony. Those are pretty gaudy numbers, right? And
pretty
they get
good.
You excited. So you see these numbers in the preseason, we're all like, wow, he really looks sharp. But we forget, and we shouldn't, how good he did look last preseason. Now, some of that was just going out there and just going at it and making plays. And it does seem that this year, Blake is much more in command of what they're trying to do. It's not as fly by the seat of your pants, but it's a reminder, and we tell ourselves every year not to get swept up with the preseason results, not certainly the game results, but even what happens between the hash marks isn't always indicative of what's going to carry over into the season. And certainly that's true, you know, for a few bad plays a guy makes, doesn't mean, but at the same time, we like to say, well, you know, it's only preseason. I think that we have a tendency to say that more about the bad plays than the good stuff. And we say, hey, wow, I'm really encouraged. They went out and played well. You'd rather have them play well. That's all they can do, given the circumstances. But it's just a reminder that it doesn't necessarily mean all that much.
No, it really doesn't mean all that much, right? I mean, the fact that Tom Brady went 1-for-4 in his preseason start, does that mean that you don't think Tom Brady's going to have a good season this year whenever he happens to get onto the field for the Patriots? No, not necessarily. It's... You take it all that with that grain of salt mentality, right? It's that anything good, anything bad, it's a little bit more evidence of which way the team is leaning, not necessarily this overwhelming evidence on where the team is, because look, the Steelers aren't game planning. We've talked about this before. The Steelers aren't game planning. We're not game planning for the Steelers here in Jacksonville for week one of the preseason or week two against the New York Giants. There won't be much of that. Week three, you can take a little bit more out of it, but still, it's not an NFL game. It's not a regular season game where these guys are going to be going all, you know, four quarters as hard as they possibly can, which changes things. And in a league where there are so many games decided by a score or less, the fourth quarter is a vitally important part of that. And the idea that you don't get to even see what it's going to look like in the second half of most of these preseason games, but that critical fourth quarter, the decisive fourth quarter for a lot of NFL games, what can you take out of it?
Right?
I mean, you get a general feeling about what's going on with the team, but that's all it is. Like, I generally feel good about where the offense is, especially with a new install and Greg Olsen coming in. I generally feel good about it. I don't necessarily think that anything I saw on Friday means that Toby Gerhardt's going to be a star this year and that Blake Bortles is going to complete 80% of his passes all season long. I don't believe that. I believe I feel good about where the offense is, and it was a concern of mine going into this season. I feel okay about it right now. And that's the kind of stuff I think you take out of preseason more than anything.
Yeah, they have certainly seemed to have simplified and streamlined, and with the emphasis on finding out what they do well first and then going to that well over and over and over again and becoming really, really good at
sure.
a few things instead of, as many have described, just having way too many options under Jed Fish, you know, instead of really focusing on what they did well. And I think they're still trying to figure out what it is that they feel like they're going to do well. Doesn't look like we'll see TJ Yeldon this weekend is my guess. Just based, I'm just trying to read between the lines of Gus kind of slow playing that. You never know, but, and if he's going to play as significant a role as we think he's going to play this year, I don't want him further aggravating anything, in the preseason, but I definitely would like to see him out there getting live reps
yeah.
by week three of the preseason.
No, I think you need to see him against Detroit. If he's,
I think
if,
he needs to
right.
get it for his own confidence.
If he's not going to be out there against the Giants, I get it. You don't want to risk injury to his hand. I get that part of it, but the other part of it is it's a rookie, and he hasn't been on the field live with these guys yet. He hasn't been out there with Blake in a live situation yet. He needs to be. There needs to be some of that going on for TJ Yeldon here in this preseason, and if it's not going to be against the Giants, then it should be against Detroit.
Yeah, I want to see a half of football where he gets a normal rotation of whatever that is. You know, it doesn't mean he gets every single carry in the half, but I'd like to see him get a full half's workload and just, you know, kind of get his sea legs and give himself that confidence, like we said, going up against the best of the National Football League. Detroit's a pretty formidable defense, even without Ndamukong Suh. They get Haloti Ngata in there. They're not going to be any easier to run against.
No.
Or not much easier to run against, put it that way, this year. So good test if he can get out there on the field at least by next week. Injury happening just moments ago that could impact the Jaguars, not on the Jags, this injury didn't occur, but could impact one of their opponents early in the season. We'll tell you about that coming up here momentarily. If you'd like to get in today, 641-1010, the phone number as always. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Today, your social media question of the day, you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. Pretty straightforward, pretty simple. Who will lead the Jags in sacks this year? We've already had some outside-the-box thinking on a couple of those answers, but tweet us or post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. You can always text us as well, or just call in with your thoughts on that, looking at which one individual will have the highest sack total for your Jacksonville Jaguars this year. As I said, we've got audio from Gus, we've got Jonathan Ciprian, we've got Luke Jokel, all that coming your way today. We'll check in with the senior writer at Jaguars.com, catch up with all the news around the National Football League
yep.
as well. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Newton, separation, completion, touchdown, Carolina.
Yeah, they went right after the rookie, Ron Darby. They put the number one receiver on him and let Cam Newton just throw it up for grabs. And that's what Rex Ryan really wanted to see. He wanted to see a young guy going against one of the best receivers, particularly in the NFC South, in Benjamin. Young, great receiver, tough matchup because Benjamin is so big. And Darby's got to hold up. That's what he's going to have to learn to defend. That right there, as hard as it looks like it is, and it is.
may have been the longest highlight in history for preseason touchdown right there, Tony. A little Florida State on Florida State crime. Kelvin Benjamin catches one on Ronald Darby last week. It appears that's the last one Kelvin Benjamin's going to be catching for a while.
Yeah.
Now, as Jags' week one opponent, Carolina Panthers, rookie wide receiver last year, Kelvin Benjamin, double-digit touchdowns, got off to a great start. They said he showed up in training camp. This is a guy who has issues with his weight fluctuating in the past, showed up in training camp in the best shape of his life, and played very well against Buffalo last week. And today went down knee buckled in a non-contact situation. Where have we heard that before?
Yeah, we've heard that pretty recently here in Jacksonville. Yeah. The video of the play is out there if you want to watch it. It is on my timeline from Carolina practice today. They were they're practicing with Atlanta, I think, up there today. He was one-on-one. No, it's Miami they're practicing with. But it was a one-on-one drill against Rashad Jones, I believe it is, from Miami. And he puts that left leg in the ground to cut and then just grabs the knee and goes to the ground. So it doesn't look good. It looks like what ACL injuries look like in the National Football League. That non-contact, they immediately go to grab it. It does not look good for Kelvin Benjamin as far as the 2015 outlook.
Yeah, right. Look, you don't root for anyone to get hurt. But the fallout for the Jags is that the Carolina Panthers will come into Jacksonville, it appears, without their number one target in the passing game. Tony, he was targeted second most targets in the end zone last year of anybody in the National Football League. So he was a big red zone weapon for that team. Certainly they've got Cam Newton, who's a red zone weapon in the zone, right? But they drafted Devin Funchess this year, expecting him to be, hopefully, to be good enough to be a number two guy right out of the gates, but they lose their number one in Kelvin Benjamin. No report on the severity of it yet, but when the cart comes out for a non-contact injury, when the knee buckles, it's probably not going to be very good. And even if it's something less than an ACL tear, you would think week one could potentially be in jeopardy for Kelvin Benjamin regardless at this point.
Yeah, and you're talking about a team. You mentioned Devin Funchess. Now you're talking about a team with Jericho Cotchery, Ted Ginn, Corey Brown. These are the kinds of names that they have to look to replace a guy like Kelvin Benjamin, who's not replaceable, right? There's nobody else that they're going to be able to find that's that size, that speed, that kind of ability. That's why you spend a first-round draft pick on a guy like Kelvin Benjamin, and going into year two, after a really productive rookie season, like you said, the best shape of his life, it's a real shame for him. Look, we don't know what the injury is yet, so we can't say for sure. It's kind of like when you saw the fan video of what happened to Dante Fowler. You knew. Like,
right.
When you saw the video,
you don't want to go on and say, oh, I think he tore his ACL, because you're just guessing,
right.
Kind of,
but
it's an educated guess.
You know, but you don't know. And that's kind of what the play looks like with Kelvin. It looks like what an ACL tear looks like in the NFL.
Yeah, I think Jarrett Boykin might be out there on the free agent market, if I'm not mistaken. There aren't too many guys out there that you'd be all that interested in or think you'd come in and make that much of a difference at this point, especially with rosters at 90 right now. And if a guy's not on a 90-man roster, that probably tells you a little bit of something about his ability as well. So,
and I think Mike Brown's up there in Carolina. Maybe he'll get a
maybe
bigger
he will.
Role.
He
coming
is
back to Jacksonville.
He, according to our lads, whose depth charts had taken a hit in terms of credibility. I gotta tell you, they used to be the source and used to be the most up to date. At any given moment, you could drop in and they would update those things based on an injury earlier that afternoon, and a little bit shaky, I found him in the last year. So regardless, Mike Brown is a member of that Carolina Panther receiving core, and it does appear like the Jags defensive backs will catch a bit of a break in week one of the season. From a fantasy football standpoint, I'll be depressed all day about Kelvin Benjamin. I will. I only have him on one team, Tony, and I'll be depressed all day. That's how I am as far as that goes.
Yeah.
LeSean McCoy yesterday, again, I'm on one team out of my many teams, and you sit there and you're waiting. What's the news? Well, it's a hamstring strain. They expect him back for week one, but you don't know. Those hamstrings, maybe he is ready for week one. He goes out there, three runs in, and he pulls that thing. The Buffalo Bills have had just a litany of injuries. Fred Jackson's on the shelf right now. Carlos Williams, the Florida State rookie, who had played pretty well for them, I think, to me, surprisingly well, because I think he's too straight line in his running style to succeed at the, with a volume of carries. I think he'd be figured out in the NFL fairly quickly, but he had been playing well for them, and now he's out, they say, for a couple weeks with an undisclosed injury that had him hospitalized with a lot of pain.
Yeah,
so,
it's a weird situation in Buffalo because McCoy goes down yesterday. I think they got two healthy running backs, and if I can remember the names, it was two rookies. It was like Bronson something.
Right, it's not even Bryce Brown.
Yeah, it was one of those rookie guys. Seal. It was something like that. But everybody else is hurt. I know Fred Jackson was hurt. Anthony Dixon was hurt. Bryce Brown was hurt. Carlos Williams, you mentioned, was hurt. And then LeSean McCoy went down in practice yesterday with that hamstring injury. They're calling it a strain right now. He's undergoing an MRI today to determine just how bad it may be.
I think they had the MRI.
Yeah, and I know Rex Ryan said after practice that nothing tore off the bone. So that's good for LeSean McCoy because that sounds hideous to have that kind of thing going on. But LeSean McCoy, they're saying, could be week one. Like, he could be available to Buffalo week one. But, man, running backs, especially guys who rely on speed as much as LeSean McCoy does and that elusiveness, you don't want something like hamstring popping up before week two of the preseason. It's just it's a bad way for that type of guy to start a season. And with every other running back basically that's worth anything on the shelf for that football team, step it on up, Mr. Seal and Mr. Bronson Hill, with plenty of opportunities here over the next couple days.
Yeah, those guys who in most off seasons would have not much of a prayer to make the roster up there in Buffalo.
Sure.
They may have to. They may not have enough healthy bodies otherwise. Speaking of the fantasy stuff, Tony, I've been getting a lot of questions on Twitter and Facebook. Is the Fantasy Forecast Show coming back this year? I've done that the last few years with yourself and Josh Carney.
Yeah.
Josh has since moved out west. Josh got a big job out in Sacramento, and so he's moved the family to the West Coast, so I don't believe he'll be making the commute to do the Fantasy Forecast with us, but we will be back on the air starting September 10th for the radio show that Thursday, and we'll be on from 2 to 3 o'clock on Thursdays like we were last season. So the first Thursday of the regular season, they'll be kicking it off in New England that night with the Patriots and the Steelers going at it. We'll be on from 2 to 3 o'clock, and you can always tweet us questions, and we hope you do. Obviously, prior to the show, we'll get to some of them on the show. We answer all the ones that we can get to. And we'll actually start the weekend prior to that with the CW 17 TV show. It's actually going to be, officially, it's going to be called the FanDuel Fantasy Forecast.
Cool.
It's going to be the radio show.
Yeah.
Your Jacks Fantasy Football on CW 17. You and I will start that on the weekend of Saturday, the 5th of September. But primarily, the show this year is moving away from Saturday night. It's going to be aired Sunday morning. I believe the time slot's going to be 11:30 Sunday morning on CW 17. But they're also going to play it. It won't be a replay on Saturday night, but they're going to play the first time it airs. It's going to be like 11 o'clock on Saturday night with the just kind of as a bonus viewing. And then the prime spot will be Sunday morning. So about 90 minutes prior to kickoff, we'll give you final thoughts on who should be in your lineup for your fantasy football team.
Yeah, looking forward to it, and we'll get it started that show the week before the regular season gets started, so the weekend before, so we'll have a preview show with that one.
Little preview.
And the radio show, obviously, with it being the day of, it's going to be go time.
It's lineup time.
And
it's news and lineups. And
I know we'll be doing, I don't know if we'll be doing any year-long leagues this year with listeners.
Oh, yes, we will.
But I know we're doing some FanDuel stuff, and we'll have some weekly leagues where you can play against us in FanDuel and, make it a weekly thing instead of a year-long commitment.
Every week we're going to have a FanDuel contest just for our listeners that you can get in, play against us. We will play head-to-head. It'll be like a $5 entry fee every week, and you can win. It depends on how many people are signed up every week, how much you're able to win. But you can take home some straight cash, homie, on a weekly basis, and we look forward to doing that. We'll focus a little bit more on that side of it this year, too, the weekly fantasy football, which is a huge growing segment of the hobby. By the way, this one from Max Henson, who's a staff writer for the Panthers, at this joint practice where we've seen Calvin Benjamin go down already for Carolina today. Dolphin safety Louis Delmas now being carted off the field after an apparent knee injury of his own. So you're getting it on both sides right now between the Panthers and the Dolphins. And these joint practices, Tony, telling you, man, these guys are, you're seeing more and more fights around the league. We've always had them, but when the league sends out an edict, a reminder this week, we're not going to tolerate fighting during games. Well, the question is, why are you tolerating it everywhere else, right? It happens on the practice field. Jeff Fisher said yesterday, well, there's really no one to blame. It just happened. Well, certainly there's someone to blame. Whoever's throwing punches is to blame.
Right.
That's kind of how fights work. But, you know, you've got the locker room incident. The NFL has not weighed in one bit on IK and Empele, and Empoli, however you say it, knocking out Geno Smith or breaking his jaw. Haven't heard about any kind of discipline coming down in that situation, if there is any forthcoming. Yeah. And these training camp fights happen all the time. And I'm not saying that, you know, the Delmas injury and the Calvin Bryant injury or Calvin Benjamin, injury have anything to do with fighting. But it's just another risk factor. You know, you got guys, Dez Bryant got sucker punched in the face at a dust-up between the Rams and the Cowboys. You get a star player hurt in that circumstance, or a guy breaks a knuckle because these idiots punch each other in the face mask.
Right.
What's
the point?
Just police it. Police it like you would during a regular game. I think coaches secretly like it, and it's kind of like hold your breath. It's much like the preseason, right? We want to see the guys perform well. We want to see Blake go down and lead a score. Oh, but don't die for the cone.
It's
football.
Well, why in a practice do you allow things to get to the point where there are blows? You know, there are two teams fighting each other, whereas in a preseason game, you would never see that. Like, it
never
gets to
that point. Maybe
because in
practice, you're repping over and over and over and over. And I don't know. And you're going up against guys, and they're in your ear, and they're ticking you off. And you realize, well, part of the reason is, Tony, what are the repercussions, right? In the game, you get a 15-yard penalty. It's going to cost your team field position. Everyone's going to be ticked at you, right? If it happens in a practice, there's really no repercussion other than the chance to get punched in the face. And, you know, most of these guys apparently don't care all that much about the prospect of getting punched in the face.
Sure, but you certainly have to wonder now with all that we've seen just early on in camps this year, the fights between the two teams that are scrimmaging against one another on these days, the injuries out there with Carolina and Miami today, teams that are doing these kinds of practices, are they going to start reconsidering doing this in the preseason? I think that it serves a purpose, right? You learn more about your guys and your team when they're going up against somebody else than you do when they're going up against themselves. So I see why you want to go and practice against somebody else, but man, is it worth it?
I don't know.
Just that risk, is it worth it?
I don't know if it is. I mean, you could ask that about preseason play, period. For some guys, I don't think it is worth it. It's not worth it to the Vikings to put Adrian Peterson out there in the preseason, right? You could say, well, he's a great performer, but under the idea that everybody needs reps, well, get him in practice, get him against a bunch of guys that know hopefully better than to knock the franchise out or, you know, do something significant to that guy that's going to impact their own fortunes that season. It's just, look, these other things. Kelvin Benjamin, Louis Delmas, that could happen any day of the week in any practice around the National Football League, especially the non-contact stuff. That's just tough breaks. But it does look like at this point in time that the great likelihood is the Carolina Panthers come in undermanned into Jacksonville. Nobody's going to feel sorry for them.
No.
Right? That's why we said, you know, as bad as it is to lose Julius Thomas and Jonathan Cyprian, you'd rather have it be something that happened now at this point rather than 3 weeks from now, and you'd rather have it be something that you think, well, heck, even if they miss a bunch of reps in preseason, they could be ready for week one, and barring further setback, shouldn't impact your regular season all that much. You compare that to what's going on with Kelvin Benjamin and Louis Delmas, and obviously it's on the different end of the scale. Coming back, we're going to hear from Gus Bradley, what he had to say after yesterday's practice as the Jags get ready for preseason opponent number two, the New York Giants, up in New Jersey on Saturday night. We'll have all the coverage for you here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM pregame. For 3 hours, of course, the game broadcast with Frank Frangie, Tony Baselli, and Jeff Loggeman, and 2 hours of postgame as well. So I hope you join us for all that. I'm sure you will, unless you're planning on making that trip up to New Jersey yourself. And glad to have you along out there as well on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, coming back. We'll hear from the head coach of your Jacksonville Jaguars, Gus Bradley, on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Interesting responses so far to the question of the day, Tony, brought to you by Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. We ask you, who will lead the Jaguars in sacks this year? I'll leave it up to you to decide who that is, and we will tally some of the responses about an hour from now, a little bit later on in the program.
Honestly, I'm a little surprised by number one and two on the responses on this list.
So far, yes. Yeah. Number three, I expected.
Yeah.
But
number three is a guy that it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, that makes total sense.
I can see that, but so I didn't expect a lot of Cap Cappy.
There is some Cap Cappy love going on out there.
Number two and number one we'll get to later.
We'll get to that later on a Metro Rooter Wednesday for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter will have the solution for you with same-day service, weekends included, the right people, the right equipment. That's how they get the job done so fast and get it done the first time. Serving Jacksonville and the surrounding area since 1975. In fact, they've come to my house several times. So I've got some jacked-up plumbing that the previous owners decided to implement. the best thing is to just have the cute sink and jack up all the pipes underneath. Maybe a more functional sink, Tony, with less convoluted plumbing. But Metro Rooter always takes care of me. 695-1911 is the number, or visit them at metrorooter.com. Let's hear from Gus Bradley, your head coach of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Again, news of the morning in Carolina Panther camp, Kelvin Benjamin. Looks like a significant knee injury, carted off the field, non-contact injury, and those are rarely good for the long-term prognosis. So likely at this point, you got to believe, very slim likelihood of him suiting up week one. I'd be shocked at this point if they come back and say, well, it's just a scare. He's got a tweaked MCL. He'll be out 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That'd be stunning.
It would be really surprising based on the way it looks.
So there you have it. Jags may catch a break in that department. Hey, and Jags shouldn't feel sorry for anybody. They lost who they hoped would be their dominant individual pass rusher, third overall pick in the draft, in Dante Fowler Jr. So that's the way the cookie crumbles. Let's hear from Gus Bradley yesterday after practice wrapped up. Here's how he opened up.
We introduced our themes of the week, even though next week we kind of get a mock game week. Today was competition Wednesday, which means we had one-on-ones, so matchups. And there were some good matchups, really, really a good competitive session and one-on-ones, and also with the offensive line and defensive line. So we needed that. Also, I thought the defense came out and had a much better day than yesterday. In 9-on-7, in one-on-ones, and in our last period of team, there are a lot of pressures. We put the pressures at the end of the practice. Just we knew that the guys might be tired there, and just put them under a little bit more strain. So we had a good session there. Introduced the Giants, had a period of prep for them, just an introductory period. But again, still working more ones versus ones.
You think about it. One period of prep for the Giants.
Yeah. Was the Giants period of prep just everyone's only allowed to catch with one hand?
Maybe. Right? We're going to run around and see if we're going to – you got to dye your hair blonde and try to catch a ball with three fingers if possible when you're on the scout team during that period. But typical practice is about 12 periods long. So less than 10% of practice spent on even looking at the Giants. And I wouldn't doubt that number is going to increase very much today. I don't think it's going to increase very
much.
Yeah,
and I think last week they didn't even have any Pittsburgh
at all,
anything until Thursday. I think he said they did one session on Thursday and then they had a walkthrough on Friday. But there's not much in that regard in the preseason. He said mock game week next week. So it'll be a different deal for them next week when they're getting ready for Detroit. Gus Bradley after practice yesterday also talking about the two injuries coming out of the week one preseason game, Jonathan Cyprian and Julius Thomas, and those guys staying sharp out there.
Well, we knew that they could do individual, with someone. The first day we didn't do anything. Second day we thought we could do some individual and be involved in walkthrough. Maybe a little bit of 7-on-7 as long as he avoids contract. So, it's a way that we can keep him sharp.
Don't hit anybody. That's the difficulty. You're out there, and you got this wrap on your hand, but
sure.
Don't let the adrenaline get the best of you in those situations. But you want them to keep their legs, Tony. That's the thing, right? You've got to find a way. And if you can run around out there and it's not going to hurt you, you don't need to be laying everybody out in practice. Protect that hand, and maybe he can keep his stamina up for the early part of the season. Dan Scoot is a guy coming in, expected to help this team, hopeful to help this team in a variety of roles, certainly rushing the passer. going to be one of those. And Gus talked about him maybe even playing some defensive end if he likes some of what he's been seeing from Scooter so far.
Yeah, I think, he had, 5.5 sacks, I think, last year. So he has those traits. I think you can never have enough rushers. And sometimes you're in a little bit of a dilemma in how many people can be up. And with an injury or two, I think you want to have that guy that can rush if an injury, knock on wood, does take place, or hopefully it doesn't take place, but if it should, we have somebody that can go in there and rush.
Speaking of free agent acquisitions, Dan Scuda, obviously one of those. Jeremy Parnell at right tackle, also one of those guys, new additions to this team. Gus Bradley commented on him yesterday as well.
I think he's doing pretty good. He's in my mind right now because I just saw him do one-on-ones, and he had a great one-on-one session. So I really like his demeanor, and not only as a run blocker, I think he's a better run blocker than we anticipated, and even against the pass, did a good job.
And we'll get back to more on the offensive line here coming up, but Gus mentioned the other day he felt like Mercedes Lewis is having his best camp since he's been here, and as he pointed out, as local observers would indicate to him, maybe the best camp he's had in a long time, possibly even in his NFL career, and Gus elaborated on that. What does he mean by Mercedes Lewis? What are the things that are standing out to him having his best camp?
You know, he just looked his blocking. You know, and his ability, he's made some big plays in practice. He looks good. He looks strong. He looks faster. And maybe it's because his body, you know, he feels good about, we're trying to manage these guys and give them days off at certain times. And I think he's really felt like it's helped him. And it shows up on film. So not only from the coaches, but our scouts that are watching it, they recognize it too. So I think it's more his movement and how he's going through the whole training camp.
Yeah, I know I've been talking about it since they signed Julius Thomas, but I think Mercedes could have a really good year. I think this is a good role for Mercedes because of how effective a blocker he is, and he's not an elite receiving tight end, but he's a good receiving tight end in the league.
When you say a good year, though, you're talking about in measurable numbers, like you talk about catches and touchdowns and all that stuff.
I think he'll I think he'll be really effective. I think this role is a really effective place for Mercedes to be for this football team because of what he's going to be asked to do basically as the sixth offensive lineman and as a second tight end when he's not blocking. He's an effective receiver. I don't think he's a great receiving tight end. I think he's a good one, and I think as an outlet for Blake Bortles at times, he could be a valuable weapon for this team inside games, just being able to move the chains on plays where before they didn't have a second tight end of the caliber of Mercedes Lewis on the field.
Who makes a bigger impact among tight ends in the passing game, in the receiving aspect of it, Clay Harbor or Mercedes?
I think Harbor will have bigger plays. I think Mercedes will make more plays.
You think Mercedes will have better overall numbers?
I think he'll have more catches.
Because to me, that's all Harbor is, right? I mean, look, all these guys want to be well-rounded, and you're a football player, and it's not like Clay Harbor couldn't knock me through a wall, okay? But he's not known as a physical blocking tight end. He is a move, stretch the field, get down the seam kind of guy. And, again, I look back at how they were using him last offseason before he got hurt, and what we saw in week one, I think Clay Harbor could be one of the surprise contributors offensively to this football team. Right now, I'd probably bet he has a bigger numbers than Mercedes Lewis, at least in the receiving department.
I think he'll make the bigger plays because Harbor is a more explosive tight end than Mercedes Lewis. I can see Mercedes twice, three or four times in games this year moving the chains on third down, right? Being the guy when they have a third and five, he goes six. And you already got Julius Thomas on the outside. Just the matchup that Mercedes can get in the middle of the field that nobody else can get, right? Just being the biggest guy on the field. I could see that happening for this team. And last year, they really didn't have that kind of option.
Well, you think about those numbers. It doesn't sound like much, but four times a game, you're talking 64 catches for Mercedes.
No, I was saying do it twice in a game four or five times during the year.
Oh, okay. That I can see.
He continues the drives for
couple
this team that have been stalling
receptions.
Out
gotcha.
For the last couple of years.
Gotcha.
Talking about the offensive line, Gus Bradley asked about the right side, and in typical Gus fashion, he spreads out the praise to the entire offensive line.
Very pleased with the right side. And the center, I think, however it shakes out, we're going to be good. I thought Zane played good in the game against Pittsburgh. I thought he showed up more there, had a couple good rushes there, so I'm hoping that he continues to grow like that. But we have some great competition there. and Luke. Sometimes, you know, we're and he gets it. I guess there's the judging of based off one play here or there. But as coaches, we try to look at the body of work, and we're pleased with his progress.
All right. Unequivocal about the right side, right? Oh, very, very good. We're good there. We, no matter who wins that center job, we're going to be fine, right? We're good. All right. Beatles, it was good. You know, he, and we need to keep going in that direction. In other words, he probably played better than they had seen from him, right, in practice recently. He probably outperformed a little bit. That's,
which is good.
Which is good.
He's maybe feeling that fire a little bit behind him.
Maybe, but let's, you know, I think the consistency is what you want to see there to the point where you're not as surprised, like, oh, okay, he did better than we thought he was going to. And granted, that, we all overreact at times to one or two plays. The fact of the matter is, I don't think I've heard Gus give that same ringing endorsement for Luke Joeckel because I don't think in his heart of heart he believes he's playing as well as these other guys. And, again, it's not all about one or two plays. And as a whole, he did okay. Sure, that's fine. But
well, it's the Stephen Morris thing, right? You know, he's been solid, and when I say solid, you know, I mean that he needs to get better.
Right, that's right. Damning with faint praise, yeah. I believe, is what that is called. Gus Bradley went on, now taking a look ahead to what the Giants bring. Even without Jason Pierre-Paul, they're known for getting after quarterbacks, so what kind of a test will that be?
Yeah, I think all these challenges, that's for preseason. You get a wide variety of challenges going up into, you know, that environment, and playing a team on the road. You know, all those things are great challenges. And, you know, they're a very good team, explosive team. They've got a lot of good talent, and, you know, they'll help us get better.
One last comment from Gus Bradley. We have Luke Joeckel and Jonathan Ciprian also talking after practice a little bit later on. But Gus asked about Rashad Greene, who only got 9 reps, I believe, at wide receiver in Friday night's game, was an effective punt returner, but didn't have a big role as a wide receiver for this football team. Gus was asked about how he has looked at wide receiver.
Good. You know what? He didn't get many reps in the game. We just held him out yesterday. So I know he's got some Achilles tendonitis. So we wanted to see how, if we took care of him for 3 days, how he would respond. Today he practiced, and he said he felt better than he has. So, you know, we're trying to figure out what works for him, and maybe those days off will clear everything up. But he got more reps today and performed, you know, where it was shocking. It really jumped out as we saw his speed again. So I think we're just trying to manage that. Hopefully he'll play more reps in the game.
Yeah, and that's something, too. These guys are practicing over the course of a summer a lot more than they're used to, and they're getting ready to go into a season that's a lot bigger of a grind than the one they're used to in college football. So it's always interesting to see how the young players hold up in those circumstances. And I told you, Tony, early this summer, seeing Rashad Greene in person looked faster to me than he does on tape or on television. He just had a burst to him, and that's what Gus is talking about. It kind of had gone away a little bit there. Maybe the Achilles tendonitis, maybe just some general fatigue and fighting through, you know, camp. But to see him out there looking a little bit more explosive, personally for me, if he catches 25 passes,
yeah,
but he's an effective punt returner, I'm fine with that. He doesn't need to be a huge play a huge role in the passing game. In fact, if he does, it means one of those three guys who was here last year likely is underperforming or injured for a significant portion of the time. So if Rashad Greene on a team that wants to run the football, his reception total is less than 30, I don't have any problem with that if he makes an impact on special teams like he did the other night. So we'll take a quick time out here on this Metro Rooter Wednesday. 641-1010 if you want to weigh in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line or get in on the phone lines, you're welcome to do that as well. Little news coming across the wire. Red Bryant, now a former Jaguar, signing with the Buffalo Bills today. That was rumored that they were looking for some help there. So looks like Red's going to get a chance to continue his career up there in Buffalo right now. Wonder if he can play running back, because that's where they're hurting right now.
Yes, it is. I don't think Red can.
I don't believe so.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Born in this date in 1958, arguably the greatest offensive lineman to ever suit up. 11-time Pro Bowler, 9-time first-team All-Pro. and an inductee into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1998, Anthony Munoz, born on this date in 1958, 57 years old today. 1960, Bobby Hebert, former NFL quarterback, along with the former NFL kicker on the same date in 1960. God bless you, Morton Anderson. We love you. What'd you guys get for Morton Anderson's birthday today? 55 years young. What'd you get him? I don't know if he's on Twitter. Everybody should wish him a happy birthday from the 904 area code. Both of those guys, 55 today. And then, Tony, you remember that day that David Boston absolutely made the Jaguars secondary look like Swiss cheese back in 2003? 20 targets, caught 14 of them for 181 yards and a couple of touchdowns. As he lit him up as a member of which team at the time?
Arizona?
No. San Diego. He would had just joined the Chargers that offseason. Obviously, coming up with the Arizona Cardinals, David Boston, born on this date in 1978, 37 years young today. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Check out the SomnaMed Snore Guard. You'll never snore again, and your loved ones are going to love you for it. So it's not just for you, it's for everybody. And also, a certified Invisalign provider, Dr. McCall's office, can be reached at 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Well, Carolina Panthers wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin carted off after a non-contact knee injury at a joint practice between Carolina and Miami earlier today. The injury occurred during a one-on-one drill. Benjamin planted to cut and then buckled to the ground, clutching his left knee. Miami Dolphins safety Louis Delmas also carted off the field today in that same practice with an apparent knee injury. Carolina and Miami are the Jaguars' Week 1 and 2 opponents in the regular season. Tom Brady and his representatives are willing to settle with Goodell in the NFL, and even more than that, is willing to accept a suspension from the league, but there is a big condition on that. They say they are willing to accept a suspension if it is for not cooperating with the NFL's investigation, not for any role Brady may have played in the deflating of footballs in New England. The two sides back in federal court today. It's already been dismissed from court, at least for today. The judge continuing to ask both sides to come to some kind of agreement. They'll be back in court August 31st if they can't. And Dez Bryant got punched in the face during a broad Cowboys and Rams joint practice yesterday. Bryant was not wearing his helmet and reportedly lost a diamond earring.
He wasn't even practicing.
Yeah, during the scuffle.
Right. What do you... Whatever.
It was dumb. It's dumb.
You're running in there in the midst of a fight. And, you know, I saw something on one of these NFL Insider shows last week. They're saying, you know, back when we had a fight in training camp, there was a rule. If you didn't get on the screen by the time they turn the camera off, because they'll stop filming, because they don't necessarily want that footage getting out there for people to pick apart. So if you didn't get in the shot, by the time the camera was turned off, you had $100. Which just goes to show you, it's not only does the NFL let it go, it's encouraged. Let's go out there and have some fisticuffs. Most people just frankly don't care. There is a difference between cold cocking a guy in the locker room and a couple of guys getting the temperature a little hot on the football field, and you're going at each other physically all day, and you know, because usually most of it's pushing and shoving.
Sure.
But get the occasional punch thrown, and usually at a face mask, which is just the dumbest thing in the world. Do you really think you're going to hurt the guy?
Yeah, you're just punching a helmet.
I don't quite understand.
But Dez apparently lost that earring.
You know, Louis Delmas, Tony, 81-yard interception return against the Jags, got the Dolphins on the board last year when they played the Jaguars, and that came right at the end of the first quarter. Scoreless game, Jags are driving down, and obviously he picks it off at the 19 and goes the other way. Jags come down and get a field goal, Dolphins get a field goal, and then Brent Grimes in the second half, as it's 10-3 at the half, opens the second half scoring with a 27-yard pick six off of Blake Bortles. And that's why, you know, people say, well, Miami's a much better team, da-da-da. Well, record-wise, they were, right? But the Jags, with the exception of those plays, and it's difficult to say. Maybe the Jags go down, they settle for a field goal in that first one. maybe not. And if it's a different game, the Dolphins are attacking it differently throughout the course of the game.
And but, I can remember both those throws. I remember the Delmas and the Grimes at pick sixes. The Grimes was a ball that he threw inside and behind a wide receiver from basically inside his own 10-yard line. It was a bad throw and just in a bad spot, and nobody went up to help him on that play. The Delmas one was that kind of rookie throw that you see where he lets the ball go, and from above, you're like, oh, he never saw the safety.
Right.
Like, it's just one of those where he never saw that guy in that play, and he broke on it and went 81 yards for the touchdown. That's the kind of throw that goes away in year two for Blake Bortles. And look, it's frustrating if you look back on last year because...
Well, it's encouraging, though, as well.
They could have beat Pittsburgh. They could have beat Miami. Like, there was a handful of teams that they went toe-to-toe with that are really good teams in this league that Blake Bortles' pick six killed him.
You want to win those games, but in retrospect, it probably sets up a lowered bar of expectations for them to jump over this year, right? I mean, let's say they had beaten Pittsburgh and Miami, and they were a five-win team. You say, all right, well, they went from 4-5. It wasn't a major step, but they got some quality wins against good teams. And I think the expectation level would be ratcheted up more towards universally 500, and, you know, look, nothing that happened last year ultimately is going to have all that much bearing on what the final record is this year.
No.
But it just goes to show you that how close that game really was with the exception of a couple of plays. And I know you could probably say that, give the Dolphins back a couple of bad plays that they made as well, and maybe the game still goes heavily in their favor. But it was a 14-point game at the end, 27-13, and two pick sixes accounting for that margin. So Louis Delmas, let's say you've got Kelvin Benjamin going out at this practice between the Panthers and the Dolphins. That's the Jags' week one opponent, their number one receiver, and it sounds bad so far, although no confirmation on what the nature of the injury is. And now Delmas going down, and he's on the Jags' week two opponent roster.
Yeah.
So, and as you mentioned, the thing with Brady, further settlement talks encouraged. Is there any chance of a settlement actually coming out of this?
It doesn't feel like it.
It certainly doesn't. And they say Brady's side, it's being reported today, would be willing to accept like a one-game suspension simply for not fully cooperating with the commissioner's office in the investigation, but with no admission of actual guilt as to the subject of the investigation to begin with, the deflating of the footballs. The NFL doesn't seem inclined to accept that whatsoever. In fact, they want every admission of guilt, and they want the NFLPA to basically sign off and agree that the commissioner had the right to do everything that he's done up to this point, which would, I would think, cut their legs out on challenging him in the future, and certainly they're not going to do that. So that's great that the judge wants him to continue settlement talks. It seems to me like they're going to be back in court on August 31st. And now you're talking about it's getting closer and closer to the start of the season where the Patriots won't know what they're going to have in the first month of the year.
Yep.
And how do you prepare Jimmy Garoppolo for that, right? I mean, the 31st, Tony, today is the 19th. What are we talking? They'll have played their third preseason game by then.
It'll be that weekend, yeah.
Right? What day is the 31st?
The 31st is a Monday, so they would have played.
They would have just played their third preseason game.
Yep.
So they're going to go into that third preseason game, it appears right now, not knowing whether or not they're going to have their quarterback to start the year.
Unless they can come to an agreement, yes.
Leaves them in a weird position. How do you handle that so-called dress rehearsal for the season? Because you could say, well, I guess you could play Brady, and then if it turns out he is suspended, you could play Garoppolo in week four, but you don't want to do that in week four. You don't want to risk the guy who's going to open your season as your starting quarterback in the final preseason game. They're in a kind of a bit of a bad spot there.
Oh, that's a shame.
Oh, I'm not feeling sorry for
it. We all feel bad.
Now,
if it turns in a bad spot,
if it turns out that the suspension is completely wiped out, I don't think it'll matter that much. I think Brady will be ready to go. But it'll be curious to see how they approach getting the two quarterbacks ready for the start of the season. We got to take a timeout. We're hopeful to catch up with Johnny O. I haven't seen him today. Is Johnny O around? Is he in the building?
He was out of practice.
Oh, he was? Okay.
Yeah, for the portion that was open. Well, he should be coming back.
We should be able to grab Johnny O coming back on the other side. Let us know what he's seen over the last couple of days, what he's allowed to share with us coming out of practice, and tell us what he anticipates for the Jags coming up against the New York Giants this Saturday night. Still to come also, we'll hear a little bit from Luke Jokel and Jonathan Cyprian. Question of the day is out there, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Which player do you think leads the Jaguars in sacks in the 2015 season. Tweet us at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony if you'd like to weigh in, or 641-1010 on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, updating news out of Carolina this morning. Head coach Ron Rivera of the Panthers says Kelvin Benjamin has a knee sprain, but will be taken in for an MRI. I don't think he knows what the hell Kelvin Benjamin's got, Tony.
Look, well, pretty much any time there's knee damage with a ligament, it's going to be some level of sprain, whether it's a tear. I mean,
I got you. It may be technically correct. Yeah. That is right. But I think he may be employing a little wishful thinking. That is,
sure.
You know,
I would be.
Hey, and guess what? Dante Fowler Jr. has a knee sprain too. Okay,
that's absolutely correct.
Right.
So that's what they can say to buy time.
Yeah, and we don't expect him to know immediately, but he has a knee sprain. Okay. Yes. Good
we
luck.
Get it. You don't want to talk about it yet.
Good luck with that. John Osier, the senior writer for Jaguars.com. By the way, .com live today on Jaguars.com will air at 1:30
yes.
live with Toby Gerhart.
Toby Gerhart.
In studio.
And that should be interesting. I mean, he's been through a lot in the last year and a half in terms of, you know, sort of being left to the curb by a lot of people. And it appears that he has a role, and if Friday night was an indication, it appears he has a chance to play pretty well. So good for him, good guy.
You can be more effective when you're healthy, apparently.
It has very little impact on me, but he certainly can. Yeah,
right. I mean, yeah. But, and that's the thing with Toby. And again, it's not an excuse. I don't know if he was used properly last year at times. Certainly, we've all weighed in on the manner of plays. The stretch play doesn't seem to fit Toby.
Right.
He seems more like a power guy, and that's how they used him on Friday night, which would indicate that Greg Olsen agrees.
Well, there was certainly last year, and it's always tough when you're trying to write about the team and talk about the team to sort of analyze it in real time sometime. But he looked very quick and looked like a different player during the off season than he did once the regular season started. Looking back, it was pretty logical that it was the injury, but it was the only firsthand stuff that this fan base and this media had to watch him. Now when you see him looking like he's supposed to look, you can look back on the regular season last year and pretty easy in retrospect to say, maybe not fully healthy. So, you know, that's the nature of what we do.
No doubt. Over the last couple of days, obviously, the practice has taken on a different tenor for the media because training camp is over. The open access is gone. You're out there for how long each practice right now?
Usually, I want to say 35, 40 minutes at the start to see who's out there, to see them walk out. You see a little individual, no team. Today, you could stay for the whole practice on Wednesdays during the season, and this is a Wednesday practice. But the cuffs are on in terms of how much you can really say. So there's not much to report off of practice this time of year. It's mainly out there. You can get a feel for who's healthy, who's in a red jersey, who's things like that.
Veteran
you can talk
day
to people,
off or whatever.
But that's pretty much it in terms of reporting. Because at some point for these teams, it gets down to now I got a game plan.
Sure.
And this is a very secretive society when it comes to preparation.
And for this week, it's not that big of a deal because, as Gus said, they spent one period on, I think, yesterday on Carolina.
Yeah. Gus will usually. Not to interrupt you, Mike, but I did.
You did.
I've been around coaches who don't say much about what happened in practice. Gus, even when it's closed, for the most part, will say enough after practice to give you an idea what they did, who looked good. And he's so forthcoming that you don't miss a whole. There's not a huge difference between what you would see reported after it closes and if it were to remain open during the regular season. So, because you wouldn't be reporting game plan information. No media corps reports game plan information, even from open practices around the league, because if they did, they'd close it, and they should. You got to get ready for a game.
Right. That their main concern is not filling column inches. It's, you know, defeating their opponent coming up that Sunday. So
most teams play that.
Yes. Yeah. That's the way they go about it. On Monday, we saw the return of Chris Clemens and James Sample to practice for the Jacksonville Jaguars. For Clemens, really the first time we've seen him in a long time. And for Sample, since he broke that arm, what, in terms of a timetable of how much activity we're going to see these guys and when we expect to see them make their preseason game debuts, what are you hearing?
Well, Clemens is a little further ahead based on the fact that he is not wearing a red non-contact jersey. So he's doing some individual. I wouldn't expect Chris to play this week. I would be a little surprised if he didn't play next week. Same of James Sample. James Sample is not going to play this week, but they are certainly, and James certainly believes he's playing against the Lions. So I don't know how much you play those guys, but I said it on Frank's show yesterday, James Sample is an interesting guy because he is a big human being for a safety. When you stand near him, I've been around a lot of safeties, a lot of defensive backs. He is one of the bigger ones and looks very, I'm trying to find the right word for it, but it's not a fake big. It looks like he is supposed to be this big.
He carries it well.
Yeah, I mean, he's doesn't look like it's pumped up or, you know, if he stopped working out for a while, it doesn't look like it would go away very quickly. He is a big guy. And if he can run and hit, he's going to be dangerous.
He thinks, and I saw him talking the other day after practice, said, hey, I'm coming in with the mindset that it's not too late. I can win this job.
Yeah.
You know, and do you think that's realistic, though, or do you think right now almost lock in Sergio Brown in the early part of the season?
Well, I think he could probably play well enough that you wouldn't be worried if you had to start him. But I always go back to, at some point for a coach, when you've got to make that gut reaction and you're turning around and saying, I want this guy in the game, you got to think they would feel a little more comfortable with the veteran who's been around all off season, who they've seen the entire training camp. If it's close, I think Sergio Brown starts because he's that guy where Gus can say, I've seen a huge body of work this off season. Let's go with him. Let's let Sergio, James Sample earn it for a couple of weeks. I get the feeling that's going to be a tight race and tough to keep James Sample off the field very soon.
TJ Yeldon, Gus seemed very non-committal about whether we'd see him this week, which leads me to believe we probably won't if you're going to be cautious with this guy.
Right.
If you expect him to have as big a role as we've all discussed, why, you know, get him further injured in the preseason?
But right.
Tony, I mentioned that we think it's important, at least it is to us, that he gets out there by week three. I think he needs some live reps against other guys. It's one thing to see it in practice.
Yeah.
It's another thing to see the speed of the game, particularly that week as you're getting ready and you've never done it in the National Football League before.
Yes. You would like to see it. He could use it. He needs it. It's important. But don't you dare do anything that might set him back physically in the preseason. Yeah, you might lose a little bit of effectiveness in the preseason opener, but I'm thinking Fred Taylor in 98 when didn't play the first couple of games a whole lot, worked him in, went with a veteran, and then when it was his time, boom, he took off like a rocket. I don't know that it'll be that slow because Fred, as I recall, didn't play a whole lot the first two games at all that year and then got in against Baltimore and was obviously very good. I think TJ will play more than that. Wouldn't surprise you at this point to see Denard start the first couple of games, bring TJ in, work it, let him feel comfortable, and when it's clear he's hitting a groove, then he's going to get the mother load of the carries.
Any word or prognosis on the timeline for Marquise Lee?
One final thought on TJ. If there's a position where you can adapt quickly in the vein that we were just talking about, I still think running back's it.
Everyone agrees. Easiest position in transition.
Yeah, you can come in, and even if he doesn't start, would it shock you to see him not start the first couple of games, and the third and fourth series of each of those games, him sort of be peppering off 3 or 4 to 5 yard runs where everybody's going, pretty good.
Right.
You see that all the time with backs. I remember Edgerrin James in Indianapolis. I wasn't there his rookie year, but I think TJ's a similar style runner. They said in preseason, first two games, he wasn't there, hold out. Third game, boom, 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 boom. It was natural. So I get the feeling TJ will be that sort of arc coming in. And you mentioned Marquise Lee.
Yeah.
Not really. I think it's a topic we need to get to today. Wasn't really asked about the first couple of days. Sort of one of those things where I think everybody's sort of assuming it's going to be at least until next week, so it hasn't been asked. Boy, you'd like him on the field week three. Feels like that could be a reach.
We don't know how long we'll see the Giants' first team, but I would suspect that they play, at least into the second quarter, mm-hmm. the second preseason game. How eager are you to see that first team defense out there and get a look and let's not let them go right down the field 1-2-3 again?
Yeah, very. I think, I don't know if I wrote it for Jaguars.com this morning, but things you want to see. You felt really good about the offense the other night. If there was one, to use a Seinfeld reference, one little matzo ball hanging out there, it was that first team defense against that first team offense of Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh believes it's going to be a really good offense. So they're going to go down the field on the first drive against a lot of teams. So that's not entirely unusual, but you still don't want to see that happen again. You don't want to be sitting here next week on Jaguars Monday or Jaguars Today with you and be talking about two drives from Eli Manning and the defense is giving up 3-for-3. So they've got to come out. They've got to be more stout. Interesting this week to watch how Odrick, Miller, Pozlesny, Scuda work together. If they can start getting things solidified and slowed down, that's what I'll be watching on defense.
And by the way, just because they did struggle, the Giants did in week one of the preseason, but they think that offense is going to be pretty damn explosive as well this year.
Well, in this league, you're going to give up points. I mean, most teams, unless you're absolute fire on all cylinders, elite defenses, you're going to have drives go against you. So that's not the end of the world. It looks like the Jaguars offense might be getting to the point where it's not a tragedy if the opponent scores, which it has been the last couple of years. First touchdown, I feel like you're out of the game. I think we're looking at an offense that can combat the other team's weapons a little bit, but you still want to try to break serve with the other team's offense every now and then. You want to get interceptions. You want to stay in it. By no means do you want the Giants to go up and down the field easily early in the game on Saturday. That's the one thing that happened the other night that people were uncomfortable with that you want to see go the other direction.
All right. Other than .com Live, which is, again, 1:30 today with Toby Gerhardt along with you and J.P. Shadrick, what are you writing about today?
I believe Blake Bortles is speaking today, and right now when Blake speaks, I write.
You write, and we follow, and we listen.
And that's kind of how it's got to be. He hasn't really talked since a very brief meeting with the press after the game on Friday. So, you're curious to see what he thought.
I was okay.
Yeah, but
he downplays it. Come on.
He downplays it, but he'll also give you little pieces of where he thinks he's at. And even if he doesn't, hey, the quarterback.
He's talking. Quarterback, man. I'm with you, brother. Right. I get it.
If he walked in here, you'd kick me off the air and put him on the air.
Yes, and we wouldn't even acknowledge that you had been here to begin with. There you go. He was just keeping your seat warm, Blake. That's what John's around here for. All right, John Osier, check him out at Jaguars.com, writing about whatever it is Blake has on his mind today.
That's
and
right.
Listen for him and watch for him on Jaguars.com Live with J.P. Shadrick and Toby Gerhardt coming up today at 1:30. Oh, no, we'll talk to you later this week.
Oh, no.
There he goes. Oh, no.
All right, guys. Thank you.
See you, buddy. There he goes. John Osier of Jaguars.com, your senior writer, and, of course, simply at John Osier on Twitter as well. Come back, Tony. We'll listen to a little bit of what Luke Jokela had to say. That was an awkward fist bump right there. He gave you the handshake. I got the kind of two-finger fist bump. I don't know what that was on the way out the door. But we'll hear from Luke Jokela and Jonathan Cyprian. Also take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you, who do you think will lead the Jaguars in sacks? Oh, the comedians. We're out in force this morning on this one. We'll get to that coming up. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Glad you're with us. Jaguars Today continues live at Everbank in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, down the stretch we come. Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Didn't want to go unremarked upon the news. Jared from Subway is going away for a long time, Tony. Looks like at least 10 years is what I'm seeing on Twitter, as he has agreed to plead guilty to engaging in sex acts with minors and receiving child pornography.
And he's agreed to pay $100,000 restitution to each of 14 victims of his. What a disgusting cretin. And what else is there to say about that? And
how much?
Yeah, you know, 10 years is getting off easy as far as that goes. Man, just unbelievable.
You can say he has no more free will.
Why could I say that?
He's going to be in jail for a long time.
He still has free will.
He can do what he wants to in there.
Yeah, you could bash your head against the wall or not bash your head against the wall.
In a limited fashion.
Yeah, yeah. We all have free will to
liberty has been taken away.
Correct. Still got the free will. He can choose not to decide. He'll still have made a choice. So they tell me. All right, so let's move along from that friendly, happy subject there. Let's hear a little bit from Luke Jokel, Jonathan Cyprian, before we get to the fan feedback spotlight. These guys talking after practice yesterday, as Jags on the practice field still right now as we speak this morning. Luke Jokel talked about improving his handwork and footwork as a left tackle.
Just trying to get better every single day. You know, training camps at times to fix things, and you know, still trying to work on hands and all that kind of stuff. You know, feel like my feet are working well, but you know, got to work the hands with the feet, and you know, still working on it. But you know, definitely feeling improvement. You know, excited about that for sure.
I think that is very on point to what Jeff Lagerman told us yesterday. Right, the feet are there, but he's not always getting his hands and receiving contact in the right way. And if you missed it yesterday, go back and listen on demand. Jeff really got pretty detailed on some of the keys to look for from Luke Jokel to know whether he's improving. And one of those is the head angle. Is he looking down? He should never be looking down at the ground. Always have that head up, you know, kind of that neck cocked back. And Luke seemed to kind of agree with that. The footwork has been there. It's some of that hand placement, which includes, you know, strength and dealing with that bull rush that he's still working on.
Yeah, and one of the things he worked on this offseason was that strength and putting on some weight, and Jokel commented on that yesterday as well.
Yeah, you know, I've been able to keep it up pretty well. You know, training camp, it's tough, you know, out in that heat every single day and sweating and all that kind of stuff. You lose a little bit in practice, but, you know, you got to eat in the afternoon. But, you know, I feel good with this weight, feel bigger, faster, stronger, and, you know, I feel like I'm moving really well with it, and that's all that really matters.
Well, Jokel also asked just if he could assess the overall state of what he's seen from the offensive line, certainly a line that gave up 71 sacks last year, 55 of those suffered by Blake Bortles, most in the league, and what has he seen from the line as a group so far this year?
You know, you can't really judge it right now. You know, we're not even to week two of the preseason, so, you know, I think every single one of the guys in the room is thinking about just getting better and working on those details. You know, we're still in training camp. We're still trying to fix things, and, you know, we're not giving ourselves pats on the backs or anything right now, so we're definitely just trying to get better every day.
Good first return, though, overall.
Yeah.
Right.
It looked better than it did last year, which is, again, we talked about it early on in the show. You don't want to take too much out of anything you're seeing in the preseason, but they look better than they did last year. Hopefully that continues to show up on a week-by-week basis. Jonathan Cyprian practicing out there on a limited basis. He's in the red jersey with the splint on his hand out there working in practice. Cyprian on still putting in work where and when he can out at practice.
Well, you know, I'm still doing some periods with the defense, and when I'm not, I try to just do some gassers or work on some little things as far as middle of the field or catching the ball. Whenever I have a chance to do something at practice, I try to practice on things I want to get better at.
Got to keep those legs for the start of the regular season. Don't let those go away as he's injured his hand. And Sip talked about the effort to stay positive as he works towards a regular season return.
Oh, no, not at all. I'm not down in the dumps. I'm just taking it day by day, still trying to work on things that I want to work on moving through this preseason mode and make sure it translates to the regular season this year.
You know, I'd be curious to see how they'd be dealing with, especially Sip's injury, if this was the regular season, where he has that kind of injury. Are they working towards having him ready for the next week?
Or would they looking at a club to
right.
go out there, you know,
I
just
mean,
wrap the hand completely?
Because it feels like he would still be able to play. Just based on the way people are talking, he'd be able to play if this was the regular season. Julius Thomas is a bit different because he's a receiver.
Right, you got to catch it.
Yeah, and needs both hands.
We don't expect the Jags defensive backs to catch the football as it is, based on last year. That's going to change, though, Tony.
Yes. One more comment from Jonathan Cyprian. He's been positive throughout this whole thing and this week, and he says he's trying to stay optimistic about the injury and staying as involved in prep as he can.
I'm real optimistic about it. I'm happy because now is the least that I'll be doing. As time goes on and my finger heals a little bit more, I'll be able to do more periods and be more, even more involved. I'm still involved even with the game planning. Even though we're not doing so much with preseason, I can help the other guys out, and it's pretty good. It's better than nothing, and I'm definitely taking advantage of the opportunity I do have instead of being worried about the downside of this.
Yeah, Jack fans are like, don't tell us about injuries. Look, we had Dante Fowler first day of rookie minicamp, but as far as these veteran players go, you know, count your lucky stars. Yes, injuries occur. You don't want them to miss time. Doesn't look like right now they'll miss any regular season time, but even if they do, looks like it would be minimal, and you compare that to the breath holding that's going on with the Carolina Panther and Miami Dolphin organization this morning, with Kelvin Benjamin and Louis Delmas both being carted off for the Panthers and Dolphins respectively.
Sure.
Awaiting results of MRIs to see the extent of knee injuries for those guys.
Yeah, Vikings right tackle. Do you have a dislocated and broken ankle in Washington with Niles Paul? I mean, there are some significant injuries happening around the league. The Jags got hit with theirs early on. Hopefully that's the last of it as far as Dante Fowler Jr., as far as losing important pieces for the entire season.
Somebody on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010 said, hello. Hi. Did John ever address the Marquise Lee question? And if so, can you repeat his answer? Thanks, Fangs. Fangs is winging.
Hi, Fangs.
He did. He basically said that's something that hasn't been addressed in the last few days, and it will be a subject he will be asking Gus Bradley about after practice. So basically, nothing new, no new update, but wait for further information. Could be coming out as early as this afternoon.
They were targeting week 3 of the preseason for his return, so is that still a realistic expectation?
Right. So we'll check in on that. And all the Jared jokes coming in now. Fast and furious. Something about the soap. Can't repeat them all, so I'm not going to. You can figure it out for yourself.
I told you, look, you're not going to put Jared in general population, because not only is he the subway guy, it would be bad enough for him to just be a guy who looks like Jared being put in general pop. But, I mean, you're messing around with kids. That's
not good.
You're done.
Right. And I don't really care much what does happen to Jared, but I would suggest this. Maybe get contacts. I don't think those glasses are going to last long. I don't think.
No.
If you're anywhere.
Or they will wind up in a very uncomfortable place.
Yes. So contacts may be the way to go for you, Jared. Or you know what? Just take them off completely. You don't see it coming that way. And maybe that'll be better for you. I don't know. All right. Today, fan feedback question of the day, Tony. The snark was out heavily this morning. Not from our end, for once, as we asked you who will lead the team in sacks.
I'm just more curious.
Pretty straightforward question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's truly a pass-rushing question. And I accompanied it with a picture of Chris Clemens sacking a Buffalo quarterback. And there you have it. Who will lead the team in sacks this year? My personal vote, I'm going to go for Andre Branch. What about yourself?
I was leaning Branch. I think it's going to wind up being Branch or Davis.
Ryan Davis, certainly. I figured we'd get a ton of response with Ryan Davis, and we did, but give us a sample of what we got here.
Here's what we got, and again, we asked because Clemens returned to practice this week.
Right, the question was who will lead the team in sacks,
Jaguars. From Frank, Jokel, he'll give up more sacks than any player on defense gets. From Daniel, because of his performance Friday and his name, I'm going with Cap Cappy. From Eric, Ryan Davis, I think his specialty rush will be the factor in this, thinking about 12. From Hadari, Cap Cappy will lead the Jags and the NFL with the most sacks and the best sack dance. The Chuck Berry, Hadari is a positive guy. From Black Dog Express, Branch, Bennett, and Clemens will tie with a dozen. Let's just hope it's not Jokel. From Dusty Duval, Scooter, working at the Leo and Auto. From Jags Brothers, Branch or Davis will lead team. What's better? At least 5 different players will have 5 or more. From Hardy Bro, Chris Smith, he was the only one who provided consistent pressure last game. And from Isaiah, Telvin, getting the most sacks for the team.
Got a few on Facebook. Surprise, Ryan Davis with 11 sacks. Chris Clemens, a close second with 10. I wouldn't be surprised, Damon, if... it was Davis. In fact, Damon Austin weighing in there. Always hashtag an 11-5 or 10-6. What is what he went with today? So, Lee Markham said Alden Smith. There's one out of left field. There's a guy trying to put pieces together. No,
I don't see
him
playing football.
I don't see him playing in the National Football League this year. He's got major. issues to get back in the league. Nathan Johnston went with Cap Cappy coming in strong. Matthew Weldon went with Luke Jokel, followed by Aaron Staley saying, I second Luke Jokel. And then Matthew said, oh, sorry, I misread the question. Then he went with Michael Bennett. I think he thought we were asking who will allow the most. I thought it was a pretty straightforward question.
I did too.
And then a vote for some Derek Marks from Jamie Clark, despite the fact that he's coming off that ACL. Hope to have him out there at some point early in the season. I believe Wagaman said yesterday, let's not see him till October. And that's probably reasonable, you know. 9 months from the time he did it to the start of the season, going to be pretty close, no matter how optimistic he is. Big guys sometimes take a little longer to come back from those, hope for a speedy recovery. But I'll go with Branch. Tony goes with Branch or Davis. I think those are the two leading candidates this year. And I don't think you can completely discount Chris Clemens with the 8 sacks last year. And I guess that's it can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing. You want that. I do believe you want that guy that makes defensive coordinators have to game plan for you, right?
Yeah, and that's why they obviously drafted the guy they did.
Right.
He's just not going to be around. By the way, for everyone picking the 11, 12 sack mark for some individual, I'm not saying that it's out of the realm of possibility that somebody on this team gets that kind of number. It's been since 2006 now.
Bobby McRae?
That they've had a double-digit sack guy. He had 10 in 2006. That's the last time it's happened. So it's been a decade. It's about time.
And I was told, if you go back and look at that tape, that was let's just use the word, the luckiest 10-sack season that maybe anyone's ever had. A lot of right place, right time in it with Bobby McRae. Hey, he got 10.
Hey.
Got him a second contract in New Orleans. Hopefully he was smart with his money.
He's in the books. And I'm there just as tired as everybody else of saying, hey, the last time they had a double-digit sack guy, it's about time for us to say, hey, we got a double-digit sack guy.
Let's get that. Let's get a double-digit touchdown catcher, or maybe a couple of those would be nice. How about a 1,000-yard receiver?
Ugh.
Right, all these milestones.
There's only been two of them in the history of the team.
Maybe
two guys
have
done it.
We need to make a list of the milestones that have been a long time since the Jaguars have topped.
They've been good at running back.
And maybe we should do that and then rank them in terms of the most to least likely to occur this year. That'll be a project for Tyler Devitt to come up with.
Yeah, and it's the single-season touchdown passing record. It needs to stop being a number that half the teams in the league surpass every year. Like, it needs to stop being that kind of number.
I mean, think about it like this. What is it? What is the number? 24?
I think it's 23.
23. 24 would set the record, okay? Blake threw 11 last year. Ben Roethlisberger, in a two-week period last year, threw 12.
Yep.
Okay, back-to-back six-touchdown games. That is more than halfway to your season-long record and more in 2 weeks than Blake produced. And, I get it. He's established. He's got great weapons. He's got all these things. Just goes to show you there's such a gulf between, where they are. There's a gulf between them and league average, never mind getting up to some of the top offenses in the league. Hopefully they can close that gap significantly this year, but that's the work that needs to be done.
No doubt.
That'll be it for us today. Thanks to Gus Bradley, Luke Jokel, Jonathan Ciprian for stepping up to the mic. Thanks to John Osier for weighing in today in his Oh No's segment. David Garrard coming back later on this week. I got a text from Dave. He's back. He's ready to rock and roll, so may get a visit from Dave on Friday. Coming up, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony will be back with you for the next few days as well here on Jaguars Today. Getting ready for XL Primetime. Thanks to Metro Rooter for bringing you the show every Wednesday. It's going to do it for us live from Everbank. We'll say hello to Joe C. Hacker and T-Way coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job!